things happen gradually. It's not like you turn 35 and all of a sudden, oh, everything goes to crap and we're going to have a really terrible experience. All these risks are shooting off the chart now and stuff. That's not the case. How's your health been? And it's a gradual process and following all the way that, all of that the way through.
Getting pregnant and giving birth are two of the most exciting things you can ever hope to experience in this life. The moment you think you could be pregnant, you're frantically searching for all the best information, which is why you're here today. I'm Stephanie King, and with my many years of experience as a professional childbirth educator, doula, and lover of all things pregnancy, birth, and postpartum, I'm here to make preparing for your birth enjoyable, empowering, and totally easy. Each week, I'll cover different topics, interview professionals, and get into the nitty-gritty birth stories from mamas just like you. And when you're ready for more, you can join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I take you step by step through exactly how to prepare your mind, body, spirit, and partner for a birth you love. So let's get started. It's time. The My Essential Birth postpartum course is here. Whether you're pregnant, just got baby home, or weeks and months into postpartum, this is the course for you. No more wondering what's normal for your body postpartum, if baby's eating or pooping enough, or how to get a good latch. You now have an all-in-one resource where you can click a topic and get the answer. Learn more at myessentialbirth.com/postpartum and add it onto the My Essential Birth course for even less when you bundle them at checkout. Already in the course? Check your student library and add the course for the same discount. I can't wait to support you on your postpartum journey.
Our reviewer of the week is Jackie P2022. She says, your personal advertiser. I absolutely love this podcast and literally recommend it to every single pregnant woman I see and to friends and family who are starting their pregnancy journey. I truly believe knowledge is power, especially in a world where women tend to have to advocate a little harder than we'd like. I have a 16-month-old and my husband and I are starting our journey of adding another babe. So naturally, I need to re-listen and listen to all the new episodes. Words can't describe how much I love the podcast. Keep doing what you're doing and know your work is caps so appreciated. Thank you, Jackie. Greatly appreciate your kind testimony and the opportunity that I have to talk to you guys here. I absolutely love that you've got a 16-month-old and you are already planning for that next one. That's super fun. I loved having my babies close together. And anyways, congratulations and good luck. And I will see you in the birth course, I'm sure. And I can't wait for you to listen to all the awesome episodes. Today's podcast episode is actually based off of some questions that I've gotten recently on Instagram. And honestly, these kind of just come in cycles like this. And this is a super common thing that women are curious about. And that has to do with being pregnant over 35, kind of that advanced maternal age, or there are other really fun terms that people call it, like geriatric pregnancy, which is just so rude. There is a time to be called geriatric, and then it is a respected moment. Pregnancy is never part of that. Like, if you can get pregnant, you are not geriatric. So a couple of the questions that we got, though, had to do with, if this is the case, what does it really look like? So I'm going to read a few. One of these came from Christy, and she was talking about advanced maternal age. She wants to know all the research and maybe any hooey that goes along with that, which I love. And then this one's from Kelsey. So if you guys are listening, like, shout out to you and thank you for talking to me in DMs or shooting me an email, because then I can talk directly to you on here. And that's super fun. She said, do you have any thoughts on NSTs, which those are non-stress tests, for low-risk women who are 35? Should I do the non-stress test or just try to monitor my baby's kicks myself? I'm going to cover both of these today, but I'm also going to go a little bit deeper than that for everybody that is listening. So particularly if you are currently 35 and pregnant, 35 and older or pregnant, or you just know, I'm going to be having babies for a while. You could be 22 years old and you're like, I am still planning to be having babies till the day I die. Obviously, this episode is going to be for you. So hang in there, stay with me. And even if you're not, this is an episode that I think is just good to have information in the back of your mind. We're going to go over induction and a couple of other things, providers and different ways that they care for their patients. But two, I think it's just really good information to have in case you know somebody or you plan to come up that with that on yourself. So with that, let's kind of dive into this advanced maternal age. So this is a term that is used for women who are generally 35 and older. Some providers will say 40 and older, but typically it's going to be around that 35 mark. Now, according to ACOG, and I will have you know, I have read tons and tons of research about this, and it's super fascinating. It's really good, strong information that is out there. It's interesting to me to see how that information is used, particularly by providers in a hospital setting with women who are pregnant in that age range. So I want to kind of debunk a couple of things today, but I want to go through that information. Anyways, so ACOG, which is that American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, they're kind of this like body of information, and they set this bar for actual knowledge, and they give recommendations for providers, but also like for women like yourself to be able to research and understand some evidence behind it and stuff. And they give recommendations. So they have articles that are on their website. I'll put a link for ACOG in the show notes so that you guys can go and check them out as well. But it's one of those things. It is not, they are not like the end all say all, but they are a respected body to be able to reference to, especially if that reference is in your favor or with what you're feeling about your care, like your intuitive, like, no, this is how my care should be, or this is how, this is what I'm feeling about, whether that's induction or any tests and procedures coming up. It is nice to be able to lean on what ACOG says as one source for you to be able to grab from and take with you. So they talk about that the age cutoff is based on evidence of a couple of things. One is declining fertility. So as you get older, your fertility declines. And then concerns surrounding certain increased risks for genetic abnormalities. And that's what they say. I know that a lot of concerns too are going to come from miscarriage and stillbirth as well. But let's start with that declining fertility, because this is something that happens as we get older. The truth is that when we are born with all of the eggs that we will have our entire lives. And it's kind of funny that we're talking about this, because I literally had this conversation with my boys this week, and I don't necessarily remember why that conversation came up. I think we were talking about, things like drugs and alcohol and all of that kind of stuff that you talk about with your like teenage kids to really be clear about the decisions that they're making. We were talking about how sperm regenerates and all this kind of stuff, and you guys get fresh new stuff all the time. But for women especially, like, they're born with all of that. So anything that their moms did, you know, during in their life and during like while they were pregnant with that baby, like, is going to affect her eggs and anything that this mother, when she's born, this baby, when she's born, everything that she does until she has her baby, like, it all has an effect on our bodies and on our eggs. So that is true and a reality. So obviously, as you get older, you have less eggs. So there's less chance of fertility. And then it's said that as those eggs, because the eggs themselves are older, not because the body is older necessarily, but because the eggs themselves are older, they have a higher chance of having some abnormalities in them just from being an older egg. So those are kind of, that's information. Now, I am going to link also in the show notes, if you are curious about fertility, you want information about like natural methods and how to get pregnant and all that kind of stuff, or how to track your fertility, particularly if you're getting older and you've been trying for a couple of months, I'm going to link that episode in the show notes as well. So you guys can go and check on that all you want. As far as the genetic abnormalities go, there are certainly increased risks, specifically the one that I know will be on everybody's minds will have to do with Down syndrome. And that is true. There is an increased risk of Down syndrome as you get older. For example, when you are age 35, you're looking at a 1 in 294 chance versus a 1 in 1,000 chance at age 25. So that is something to consider. I'm going to put along with this, though, because we're going to talk about miscarriage and stillbirth as well, that some of that may even be part of the reason for miscarriage and stillbirth. Sometimes what can happen is our bodies detect certain abnormalities or things that just are giving off a signal that it's not in the normal range of whatever. And that can be why stillbirth or miscarriage can happen. So that is one of those factors that may be a contributing factor to things like stillbirth and miscarriage. As they say, because of the age of those eggs and any abnormalities that might exist, that could increase those things like stillbirth and miscarriage as well. Now, keep in mind too that when we're talking about especially things like stillbirth, miscarriage, that kind of stuff, that our bodies also are older during that time. And depending on how we take care of our bodies or maybe hereditary stuff or whatever that we're dealing with, and that includes things like preeclampsia, high blood pressure, diabetes, kidney disease, lung stuff, all of that kind of thing, that can also put you in a high risk category, having nothing to do with you being age 35. Separate from all of that, that if you were 25, these could still put you in a high risk category. Keeping that in mind, like your body is older, you're having physical challenges, having nothing to do with pregnancy, and then you get pregnant, that can also increase that miscarriage and stillbirth and all that kind of stuff. So of course, we're going to talk about some of the ways that we can improve outcomes as we go through this podcast episode. So to give you some numbers in regards to miscarriage after the age of 35, or just a couple of things that we can take a look at that go together here, a risk of a pregnancy ending in a miscarriage for women age 30 is 18%. That rises for women aged 35 to about 22%, which is a significant increase from one age to the next. And then at 40, it increases to about 38%. And they say it's at about 70% for women who are aged 45 plus. Now, that again, that particular information and that study and all of that stuff did not necessarily take into account the health of mom and her habits and all of that kind of stuff. So keep that in mind. So for example, one study found that women who were aged 18 to 34, so this is all before you're hitting that 35, they had a stillbirth rate of 1.7 for every 1,000 births. And then once they hit that 35, they did this from 35 to 39, that stillbirth rate went up to 2.2 per 1,000 births. And then people 40 and older, women 40 and older, had that stillbirth rate of 3 per 1,000 births. Now, the important thing to notice here, and those percentages are 0.17, right? 0.22 and 0.3. I think what's important to notice with all of that is it's easy to focus on, and every baby matters, right? So every single baby that is born stillborn matters. And all of the babies that were born healthy matter too, especially when we're talking about evidence and looking at what is the safe thing for me to do as a mother while I am pregnant and making decisions for myself and my unborn baby. And so I think it's really important that like we can look at those like tiny increases there and say, I notice that there's some significance here. And it's okay to say, and the other 998 children were all born healthy, all within those age ranges. Does that make sense? Really, when we're talking about studies and numbers, it, like how you read the information and internalize it, or even flip the information, makes a difference. So I wanted to make sure I said that right here so that those that are listening are like, okay, yes, I'm getting all the information and all the details. And am I processing it correctly for myself, my baby, my birth, my, you know, being able to talk to my provider and all that kind of stuff. I think that's really important. They do say that the risk of stillbirth continues with each subsequent week of pregnancy as well. So now here's where a lot of the interesting information comes out. So if you've got a mom, well, right now you guys are all dealing with this, like whether or not you are age 35 or not, if you are listening, somebody is probably going to offer you induction at some point in time during your pregnancy, and it'll probably be around 39 weeks. So that's important for you to know. And there's an entire episode that we did on the ARRIVE trial, and I will link that here as well, because that is definitely a good one to listen to. And once you are in that older category too, it might even be offered more aggressively. And that like number one thing is going to be, but stillbirth increases, especially because of your age, every subsequent week that you continue to be pregnant. And again, yes, that is true. And the percentage is very low. And so when they do these studies, what I really like to look at is the truthfulness of, yes, there is an increased risk if I stay pregnant that this could happen. And in order to make sure that that didn't happen in the way of induction, you would have to do so many hundreds of inductions to save one baby. And with all of those inductions, then there are other increased risks for things, which right now they're saying studies don't necessarily show increased risk once you do induction for cesarean birth and stuff like that. But even in regards to how a mom feels about her pregnancy and labor during that time, how she was treated, the mechanical nature of things, the emotional side of things, the spiritual effect that it has on mom, all of that included may not be worth it. Now, it's also really important that you guys have this information so that you can make choices for yourself, because I can't tell you what the best outcome for you and your baby is going to be. And I'm not going to be the one living with that decision. You will. And that's important to remember when you're speaking with your providers too. If you have some certain intuition, if you have a feeling about things, if you're feeling a certain way about your body in this situation, that matters, because in the end, it is not your provider, even a good, nice, well-meaning provider. That is not the person that's going to have to deal with whatever happens. It will be you, and you will have to be able to feel comfortable and happy and joyful with the decision that you made for your body and your baby during pregnancy and labor. So, and no pressure on that, right? But that's the reality of it. In the end, that is what we are left with. And that's why it matters so much that we have good information and we make good decisions for ourselves, and that we're the ones in charge of those decisions. So all of that is just food for thought there. The other thing that I wanted to mention here is the newer studies that we have, because we have gotten better as a society about how we take care of our bodies, the knowledge that we have regarding things, even the healthcare in general, and how involved they are and keep track of things. And just we've gotten better as a society about being healthier and all of that. Because of that and the way that we take care of pregnancy now, if you are specifically healthy and low risk, then those numbers are very, very minimal. And even if you aren't, even if you have some of those other struggles, we are still better today at having less of a risk of stillbirth and other complications like that because of the way that things have advanced. And that is really positive. You have to remember, oftentimes, and this is very much the case, especially in the medical field, information that's given to providers at the time is the studies that are done are not done necessarily that year. With all the information, a lot of times studies are, these are pulled back even into the 50s and 60s, and all that information is gathered up, and then we make percentages and averages and all that kind of thing. The benefit of having these years and years of studies is you can also say, look at from the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s versus late 80s to where we are now, how different that is in such a positive way, just in like the timeline of life and the accuracy of the studies and all that kind of stuff. So keep that in mind too. Also, if you have an older provider and maybe they're really good at keeping up on like the new information and the new studies, and that's something that they're interested in, they might not be. And so the information that they have, as good as it was at the time that they were using it, might be outdated. And the truth is, in the medical community, it just takes time for these things to like come around and policies to change and providers to practice differently. And that's just the reality of it. So in some ways, this is where like the internet and all of these like, you know, technological advances and opportunities, they give us this opportunity as parents, as moms, to do a little bit of research, to feel good about our decisions moving forward, to not only have to rely on our single provider that we have in our lives. We can do our own research and grab some of that information for ourselves to make a really good educated decision about our specific situation. I'm not asking you to be your own doctor, but we have all been there where you do your own research, you know your body, you're telling the provider in front of you that, no, it's this, it's this, it's this, and you feel like you're not being heard, and turns out you were right. So I am not putting providers to the side here necessarily. I think it's really important that you have a good working relationship with your provider, and it's why it's so important to have a provider that is listening to you, because truly, you know the best about your body, period. I don't care if that provider has delivered 10,000 babies, you know your body best. Period. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. Okay. So now that I kind of got into some details about the concerns, the big red flags that everybody's worrying about, the wondering about stress tests and things like that, actually, let's talk about that really quick. And then I want to move into what you can do like right now to increase the chances of having a really positive outcome. But one of the questions had to do with, should I, I'm 35, I'm pregnant, should I have these non-stress tests? Should I just trust my body? Whatever. So some of the studies that I was looking into and that are out there now, they were pretty clear in showing whether or not a mom was having non-stress tests or not, the outcomes were the same. So what changed during that time, and that's what I thought was interesting, what changed during that time was the provider's perception of how things were going. So when you're searching for a provider, look for a provider. If you are over the age of 35, you look for someone who doesn't immediately treat you like you are high risk and this is a problem pregnancy, because their perception of how things are going makes a big impact on the care that you're going to receive and the decisions that they will make for you and for your pregnancy. The other thing that as I was reading through and was super interesting and makes a lot of sense for a lot of different reasons, but I'll say it here, is those women that found themselves in midwifery care outside of a hospital setting, because it was interesting, midwifery care in a hospital setting was pretty close to the same as obstetric care in a hospital setting, but midwifery care outside of a hospital setting specifically had much lower rates, significantly lower rates of stillbirths, miscarriage, other interventions, cesarean birth, obviously, but crazy things that happened, hemorrhage, all that kind of stuff, no matter the age, but including women who were age 35 and over. And so that's where that perception, like I was talking about, like a midwife looking at and there are midwives as well. I've talked about that before, very clear about that, that still when you are looking for an out-of-hospital midwife, it matters who you're with and ask all the questions and make sure that they're competent and all that stuff. But the perception for midwives with women who are birthing out of hospital is birth is normal. It is not an emergency. It is not an obstetrical event. It is natural and normal and a part of life, and your body is built to do it. And we're just going to trust the process. And I'm here in case anything goes wrong or if you need help and support along the way. That is a very different approach to how a provider in a hospital setting is likely to see things. First of all, they're a trained surgeon if they're an obstetrician. And even as a midwife, they are trained differently when you are trained as a CNM versus a CPM or a DEM, certified professional midwife or direct entry midwife, women who practice midwifery outside of a hospital setting versus having to be a registered nurse prior to becoming a certified nurse midwife. They have seen things differently. And that's not to say you can't have a great CNM who treats things very naturally and all that stuff. Obviously, I'm going over averages and all that right now. But the way that they perceive the birth process can change their recommendations, their support, the way that they speak to you, the way that they trust your body, the way that they trust you in trusting your body. That can all change depending on your provider. And so if you come into a provider and you're 35 and they're like, well, you are high risk, you know, it's like the first conversation you have. We do have a geriatric pregnancy here. So let me tell you about how things are going to be a little bit difficult for you versus somebody who's like, yeah, you're 35. We'll keep an eye on things, but it's no different than 34, you know, when you were a year ago from now. That's another thing to think about. Things happen gradually. It's not like you turn 35 and all of a sudden, oh, everything goes to crap and we're going to have a really terrible experience. All these risks are shooting off the chart now and stuff. That's not the case. How's your health been? And it's a gradual process and following the way through. But making sure that you're with a provider whose perception is going to be spot on. So what they found was when these providers were recommending non-stress tests, the way that they were reading it based on the age of the mom and all of that kind of stuff, their perception could change the outcome for mom in feeling like she's being forced to induce or the provider making it seem like that it is this big scary thing that has to happen now when that's really not the case. And as I said, inductions oftentimes do not increase the safety or stability or outcome, the positive outcome for mom and baby. So there are other things that need to come into play there if you're a mom who is older or younger and, you know, dealing with preeclampsia or gestational diabetes, or there are other risk factors there, and not even those on their own, because we know that those alone, even though they are something to be paid attention to, don't necessarily necessitate an induction. all of those things can, it's just part of the process and the thinking of the provider. And so that is why it's important to be in charge of your situation, but have a provider in your corner. You want somebody that's going to be cheering you on, giving you good information, someone you can work with, who has you and your baby's best interests in mind, and allows you to be a part of the process. Now, let's talk about those things that you can do to stay healthy and low risk, which I feel like I preach a lot to you guys, but I don't think there's any amount that is going to be bad for you to continue to hear. More importantly, what I want you to take away from this podcast episode is you have a lot of power in how your pregnancy goes, period. Because all of those situations and studies and information and percentages and whatever aside, if you are doing your part to remain healthy and low risk, which looks like eating a healthy, well-balanced diet, getting tons of protein during pregnancy, you know, 100 grams plus a day, if you can do that, drinking tons of water to where you are peeing all the time. It is a pale yellow. You are never thirsty, and you are exercising regularly, meaning you are moving your body and getting your heart rate up for at least 20 to 30 minutes a day. If you are doing those things, just those things, then you have not only decreased your risks of a lot of issues that you have an opportunity to not run into. So not only have you decreased your risk for some of these more serious complications that could leave you in a high risk category, but you've also given yourself power over your pregnancy and your labor and your birth experience. And that's huge. These are all things that you can be doing right now. But if you do those things, and we know if you do them prior to pregnancy, especially, and continue in them throughout pregnancy, you're putting yourself in a much better position to be over your birth situation, over your pregnancy goals, over your birth goals, and over your care in general. And then if you're doing your part to find that provider that is going to jive well with you and be on the same page with you and in your corner, then again, all of that is going to line you up to have a really great experience. And let me say here that 35 and older or not, there is a lot that you can do to have a very positive experience. And the risks involved with being a little bit older are very minimal if you're doing some of these things, and also just in general, if you're taking care of your body. So you're gonna find that really good provider, you're gonna get educated, you're gonna know exactly, you know, what you should and shouldn't be doing during pregnancy and during labor and all that, like what those things are that matter most to you, what your intuition is telling you, you're gonna be able to trust all of that. And I think too, I'll just say it because I'm a little bit older now. I think as you get a little bit older, I think one of the benefits of that is you've been through some stuff before that has given you a voice, empowered you a little bit, put you in more of a confident experience. And maybe that's not you, but I do think that as you get older, you just get a little bit wiser, and you're more willing to speak up for yourself. However, if you are listening and that's not the case, then it's really important to have somebody, whether that's your birth partner, maybe you have a doula, maybe you have a mom, or a sibling or a friend that can help you work through this so that you do feel confident, so that when, even though you now have all this information, you feel so good about it, that when you go to that provider and that provider says, yes, but don't you know you're older and your baby could die if you go to 42 weeks, that you are able to say, okay, that was information that provider just gave me, and I am so grateful for that information. I recognize it. There it is over there. And I know all of this positive research and information that is also totally true, and I can grab from that because that's what I'm choosing to do. Now, if you along the way decide for whatever reason, I feel like I would like an induction, I feel like I would like to move forward with whatever this provider is recommending during labor or whatever the case, as long as you are part of that decision-making process and you get to listen to your body, you get to listen to that intuition, then by all means, make those decisions, but make the decisions with confidence. Make it with empowerment. Make it with the knowledge that you have, not because you are scared. Decisions based out of fear are never the ones that bring us joy, right? So as long as you are making good decisions for yourself and you're in charge of that process, then do it. That is the way to do it. I know a lot of moms want to know, if I'm over 35, how is this going to affect my birth plan? And the truth is, it really shouldn't affect it a lot if you have that provider and everything like we've talked about. And then as far as the induction stuff goes, I think that's if you are looking for a provider even right now, and we're going to include, I'll include in this episode, the list of provider questions too. But I think something to have a conversation about early on with your provider, 35 or not, but especially if you are over 35, is induction. Start that conversation right away. Hey, I know I'm over 35 and tell me what you do for women. Do you typically offer induction? At what week would you offer induction? Just start probing and asking those kinds of questions and see what that provider is saying is their normal, you know, way to handle someone like you, which maybe you're healthy and low risk and all that kind of stuff. Or maybe you do have gestational diabetes or something else like that. What is their response to you? That's a really important conversation to have. And earlier is better because then you can meet with other providers if that conversation doesn't go wrong. The trickiest part, I think, with being on the same page with a provider is, and I've seen it with doula clients quite a bit, but you meet with a provider early on and it seems like you guys are just on the same page and they get you and it's going so great. And then all of a sudden, later in your third trimester, they say something or bring up something or recommend something that you're like, whoa, like that just made me like feel like I was touching a hot frying pan, like snap back and revert into myself. And like, where did that come from? Have those conversations, ask the hard questions prior to being in a place where you're like, I'm too far along, I cannot deal with having to find another provider right now, or whatever else would be going on in your mind. Have those conversations early on so you can have good good feedback from your provider. So if you need to find a new one, that you can. I also want to encourage you too, if you are over the age of 35, you can still have an uncomplicated, unmedicated birth if that is what you are looking for. I will say, based off of research and just personal preference, I guess, from like dealing with other women professionally as a doula, I do believe you have a greater chance if you have a really great provider. And oftentimes that can come from an out-of-hospital midwife. So absolutely, if you feel safest and happiest in a hospital setting, do that. If you haven't thought of or you're curious about at all what it would be like to work with a midwife in an out-of-hospital setting, just go interview them. Like, you don't have to hire him. You can just go and talk to him. But I think it is so magical and incredible to be able to like compare the two. Like, if you've always been with hospital providers, and there's nothing wrong with that, totally nothing wrong with that, go interview an out-of-hospital midwife and just see how you feel. Like, see how it feels to have somebody talk to you in such a way that is like, oh my gosh, yes, like birth is normal. This is normal. There's nothing to worry about. Like, it's just all part of the like body's process. Really, like me saying it to you right now is not even close to the same as you meeting with a provider and having them instill that confidence just by their confidence and knowing that it's normal. Like, when you experience that, you will just be like, whoa, I didn't know. And that's like one of my favorite things. When you guys come to me and you say, oh my gosh, like, I'm so glad I changed providers because I was dealing with this provider and it seemed like they were totally fine and I was happy with them and whatever. And then I decided to interview this other provider and it was like night and day. And I'm like, yes, like, you don't know until you go and try to interview someone else. Like, just go through a couple different providers and interview them and see what I mean. Even when you feel like things are great, trust me, like, it's so interesting. Anyways, okay, that is the episode for the day. So thank you for joining me. I absolutely loved connecting with a couple of you off of Instagram and turning that into a podcast episode for today. Definitely check out the links in the show notes. There are a couple downloads and there's just some locations that you can go for different podcasts and some of the studies that we used when I was creating this. So yes, until next week, have a great one.
If you loved what you heard today, the very best way to support this podcast and help other moms to find it is to leave a quick review. I read one at the beginning of the episodes, and I would love for yours to be next. And if you're ready for even more pregnancy, birth, and postpartum goodness, come join me in the My Essential Birth course at myessentialbirth.com, where I will hold your hand and walk you through pregnancy and birth step by step so you're totally prepared for a birth you'll love. See you next week.